when I was a little boy, the streets were filled with love. I used to go outside and play with the boys and girls. You can't do that now. Haven't you heard? The street that used to be filled with love. All you hear by now is blood. Oh, Lord. We didn't have to worry about anybody doing no harm. All we worried about is where our next meal was coming from. It ain't like that now. Haven't you heard? Oh, Lord. Why do you
from Marysville, Tennessee. That songwriter, arranger, band leader, and blues legend, Bobby Blue Bland, with Sad Street. It's a title track from his 1995 album. Bland was inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame in 1981, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992, the Memphis Music Hall of Fame in 2012, and he received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 1997. He died 2 years ago at the age of 83. But, of course, by then, he had made his profound artistic statement. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And last Wednesday's mass shooting in San Bernardino, California, in which a Muslim couple, Syed Rizwan Farouk and his wife Tashfeen Malik, killed 14 people and wounded 21 others attending a holiday party, the shooting has jarred the national consciousness and has spawned all manner of reaction. But today I wanted to ask you to share how this tragic event, which President Obama has called an act of terrorism, is shaping and or changing your attitudes about things. From the news reports, you see how the media have been reporting this and event, and there are quite a few disturbing things about the reports. More so than anything else, the tone of the reports, the one-sidedness of it. It is, of course, very early, but for the most part, all of the information is coming from, quote, official sources, unquote, and very little in the way of independent inquiry, and it is understandable. We have a dramatic event here, and so many pieces of it need to be sorted out. But then you look at the tone of it, and you see how it is fitting into a really disturbing pattern. And the pattern, of course, at times like this, when it is politically expedient to create this notion, the president talked about the nation and the American family and waxing philosophic about a reality that simply does not exist. We are not an American family. We haven't been an American family for a very long time. The notion now that the nation must come together because we are all under attack, the notion of forging a new direction under duress which requires sympathetic reaction. It requires a nationalistic fervor that we should all band together because we are under attack. And we have to be clear, we are not under attack. The country may be going through a whole bunch of changes, but as I've been discussing, there is a direct relationship between why we are under attack and what we are under attack for, and the conduct of this country outside of its borders, what it has done, and what it continues to do. And there are people who will take dramatic and radical, even radical measures to object to it. But still, the tendency and the propensity is to say there is something that has happened and there's only one way to see it, and it's a one-sided view. And we're not getting from the media, all of the media covering this, for the most part, they're taking the same nationalistic perspective, the us against them perspective, that the United States is under attack, this is terrorism, and therefore it is unwarranted and it is a one-sided thing. And the issue of cause and effect goes out the window. People are not linking the effect to the cause, nor the cause to the effect. And yet they know that it exists. Of course it exists. And this is something that we return to time and again when the nationalistic fervor, you know, of course, egged on from the left and the right and even the center. Everybody's pretty much in the same bag. We've got to beat them down. We've got to destroy them. These people are out to get us. If you listen to the tenor of Donald Trump, you know, and others of his ilk, let's just destroy them. You know, as he says, bomb the hell out of them and just, you know, decimate them and so forth, our enemies. And of course, we have that tied into the race-based and xenophobic notion that Muslims are out to get us, a good old Christian country. And you have this kind of primordial fear surfacing, but they're not saying what the fear is. The fear, of course, is white supremacy is under attack, direct attack. And the systems that promote it and that safeguard it will automatically respond, but within that framework. How do we know that people know that there is cause and effect? Well, I want to share with you a statement made, a series of statements actually made by Hillary Clinton. Here she is speaking before a congressional committee in 2010. She was Secretary of State then, and she's addressing the U.S. conduct in Pakistan in particular, but in the so-called Middle East generally. And she says something that is widely known, but she confirms it here. The same Hillary Clinton who now takes an entirely different and hawkish view. Here was her view in 2010, testifying in Congress.
We also have a history of kind of moving in and out of Pakistan. I mean, let's remember here, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago. And we did it because we were locked in this struggle with the Soviet Union. They invaded Afghanistan, and we did not want to see them control Central Asia. And we went to work. And it was President Reagan in partnership with the Congress, led by Democrats, who said, you know what, sounds like a pretty good idea. Let's deal with the ISI and the Pakistani military, and let's go recruit these Mujahideen. And that's great. Let's get some to come from Saudi Arabia and other places importing their Wahhabi brand of Islam so that we can go beat the Soviet Union. And guess what? They retreated. They lost billions of dollars, and it led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So there's a very strong argument, which is, wasn't a bad investment to end the Soviet Union, but let's be careful what we sow because we will harvest. So we then left Pakistan. We said, okay, fine, you deal with the stingers that we've left all over your country. You deal with the mines that are along the border. And by the way, we don't want to have anything to do with you. In fact, we're sanctioning you. So we stopped dealing with the Pakistani military and with ISI, and we now are making up for a lot of lost time.
Okay. Now, that doesn't sound like the current presidential candidate, does it? The one who says, that, you know, we have to fight terror and all of that. That was a whole different person in a whole different era. But very clear that this is about cause and effect. You invest, she says, invest. It wasn't a bad investment, that was the argument. It wasn't a bad investment to arm these people that we now consider terrorists and these dictatorships and to play ball with the people we now consider pariahs. What did she say? We were moving. We were moving in and out of Pakistan. And she says, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago. You see, cause and effect. Somebody understands that. And I would imagine that if the Secretary of State, the person who directs the diplomatic efforts of the United States, if a Secretary of State understands this cause and effect, and specifically with regard to the question of terrorism, I should think that the administration as a whole understands this connection between cause and effect. And the military understands this connection between cause and effect. And when you have members of Congress, she says, not only did President Reagan initiate some of this, Congress did, and even the Democrats, she said, led by the Democrats, they did it. So we are aware, are we not? At the highest levels of government, those levels that control what gets done, what doesn't get done, which wars are fought, which wars are not fought, which people get funded to basically carry out, execute their brand of terror, one would imagine that they understand and have a very clear view of cause and effect. In fact, people have been saying for a long time in Congress, the terrorists that we are supposedly, the nation is fighting today or is now trying to dispatch to other people's sons and daughters to go fight, you created these monsters. You maintained these monsters. You funded these monsters. You looked the other way at their atrocities committed with U.S. weapons and machinery and bombs and military materiel. So we can't act all of a sudden like total innocence that we have no idea how these things are happening or why these things are happening. What is it? But the media, working hand in glove with the government, have begun their job, ferociously begun their job, and their job is to create an unreality, to disconnect the cause from the effect, to basically stop doing what is known as journalism and become stenographers and become essentially the people who are participating in a massive propaganda operation to rile up the country, to force and influence its nationalistic fervor. We are now to think we are Americans. All, of course, as President Obama himself said, we are part of the American family. And when the family is under attack, we ought to get together and we ought to band together and support whatever it is they ask us for, if they ask us for it at all. But whatever it is they want, in order to defend us, we should say, okay, no problem. Go right ahead. You want another war? Go right ahead and do that. In fact, the president said that's one of the things on the top of his list. Authorization from Congress. The same Congress that he said was doing nothing and impeding his effort to end the war. He now wants this Congress to authorize a war that will send other people's sons and daughters to die for freedom and democracy. So why we discuss these things is to remind ourselves that nobody here could be trusted. They're all lying. And they have the advantage, in this case, of complicity with a very effective media. Every day, lots and lots of stories personalizing this event as, you know, two jihadists, and they are bent on, just the two of them will be killing all of America, and this is what it's all about. There's no reason to doubt this story. There's no reason to raise any questions. Whatever we are reading, we look at the sources, and you see over and over again, these are, quote, official sources, as if we have a history in this country of officials telling the truth, the absolute truth about things. So I thought I would ask for your reaction. How are these events, you know, not just the killings out in San Bernardino, but also the police cases that we have been discussing, the climate in general, the direction of presidential campaigns and the presidential candidates, how they are using these events to shape not just their own presidential campaigns, but the public opinion. And how do we see it all coming together, connecting all the dots? These are the questions that I think we should be talking about today. How are your opinions changing and being influenced? And what would that now be? What would your thoughts now be? As you observe these things unfold and as you learn more about what is being said about these stories, what are your thoughts as a citizen, as a political person? What are you thinking? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'm looking for you to take us into several levels of meaning, and be the political analysts that you are. I'm interested in you sharing dimensions to this time that we are in, and what is your relationship to it? I mean, how are you functioning? What is your thought process in this time? How does your thought process either jive with or differ from the prevailing view? And what allows that? What allows you to maintain a certain distance from the prevailing view? These things help us to maintain focus, believe it or not. We maintain focus by looking at the the situation in a broad sense. We get the little pieces here and pieces there. We connect it and we see the picture. What is that picture from your perspective? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We'll take this very short break and come back to your thoughts right after this.
I'm living on Side Street. It's a sad street. I'm trying to survive on Sad Street. I'm on Sad Street. Love, that's where all the trouble be.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm your host, Eutrice Lead. And your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Adin, you're on the air. Or is it Aiden?
It sounds like you opened my line.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so this is my ad in New York. Good
oh,
day.
Thank you.
Season's greetings of the Most High and the Most Positive to the PRN Lead Stories family. I think this is an important question, and I want to say that I can sum it up in one term, and I came across this particular term on the back flap, and of course it was in the book too, of a book I read about 6 or 7 years ago. I can't even remember the title, but the author's name was something like A.E.O. Kephas, K-E-P-H-A-S, sounds like a pseudonym. And what the term that I've got into my vocabulary was Masonic Sorcery Theater, okay? And that's where we are in terms of the psychological warfare that all of this is about. And it's important to understand that concept, whether it's the police executing us, shooting first and asking questions later and doing it with impunity, or the whole prison industrial congressional complex that is why people like Hillary and the bankers and the rest of those ilks don't wind up in prison because it's only designed for certain folk. Now, in line with this, because I did hear, and this might be shocking to some in our family, but I was listening to a GCN program, The Power Hour, with Joyce Rowley. And today she had on Scott Bennett, who's former intelligence. And he was looking at what happened in San Bernardino in terms of flyers that went out for crisis actors. There's debate whether actually, according to disinfo, nodisinfo.com, Cass Ingram, whether there was even dead bodies. I mean, some people are very sensitive around that, which is understandable. But the agenda would suggest to us that this is staged on some level. And for people who want to follow up, I just got a book by Michelle Chosadovsky, America's War on Terrorism. Those who think that the 9/11, September 11th, because the 9/11 is a part of the Masonic Sorcery Theater, so we need to drop that term. And he was also with Guns and Butter, Bonnie Faulkner, which you referenced last week. I listened again, and every time I listen, because he gave the scenario of what's going to be happening in Africa in terms of the new colonialism there and the Afrikan. But basically, he referenced Paris Match magazine and of October 2nd, where they said, basically, the headline was, coming, Francis 9/11. I might not have the exact headline, but saying that, you know, watch out for their next, France's 9/11. So all of this is staged. It's a very, very bad situation. And those who want to get even
but
a further hand.
Let me just ask you here. What are your own thoughts?
Well, I'm sharing my thoughts. When I look at any of these situations, any of these mass shootings, and someone who I appreciate their work, Jim Fetzer, Professor Fetzer of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth, someone who has degrees in logic, and he's just done a book that Amazon has dropped, which says that no one was killed at Sandy Hook in Connecticut. So I go with the forensic people who look at these events, and my overall picture is of psychological warfare. And Utrice and family, just to reference that, I'm dealing with a book now that I can't put down. It's called The Most Dangerous Book in the World by a gentleman named Bain, if you can believe that, B-A-I-N. And the subtitle of that is 9/11 and Mass Ritual. So he shows the extent of the psychological warfare from Bush reading with little black children in a Florida classroom, the pet goats story, they're reading in unison, and he makes all the connections to how it's an occult ritual that started when the World Trade Centers were built by the Rockefellers, and I can't explain it in a couple minutes, but he makes all the connections, and it's Trine Day Publishing. Brother Chris Milligan will give you some discount, but give some books if you're giving stuff this holiday season. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling and contributing to the program today. Thank you so much. From White Plains, Sal, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. This is Sal. How are you?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts today?
My thoughts are I am in complete concurrence with your previous caller. She's obviously done the research in this area, as I have. And I think you will see that if you check out, I can send you links to this, Wolfgang Halbig. He was the guy that wrote the book after Columbine on how to deal with mass shootings, especially in schools, in elementary school. He's been a principal. He's been a cop. He's a top advisor. He started looking into Sandy Hook and seeing all these holes and problems. He wasn't being honored for Freedom of Information request. And he's been harassed and hassled. He had a site taken down. He had a book removed from Amazon. It's really amazing. And at this point, I don't trust anything the government says. I understand that they have a point of view that they want people to believe, but I don't trust anything. And it's just
so
looking to...
How have your own political... your own political thinking changed? Has it changed? And in what way has it changed with all of the events that we've been talking about recently?
Well, it's been evolving. I used to think that there was, you know, some people that, you know, wanted to do the good thing in Washington, but I'm starting to get to where Gary's opinion is. It's a cess toilet of people that are just out for money. And they've been bought and sold on both sides of the political aisle. And very few people. And I think Bernie Sanders, you know, even him, Bernie, I don't know how far he really wants to go with this stuff. Or if he's just there to, you know, rally supporters behind Hillary Clinton, ultimately. But and his foreign policy isn't that great. He's, you know, they want to continue these perpetual wars and these false flag events that they set up are designed to keep people in fear and to continue, you know, bombing and war in the Middle East.
Well, and, you use the phrase false flag, and a false flag operation is an operation that is actually conducted for a different reason by hands that we don't see. So
it's something on somebody else, like they did with 9/11, which is total fabrication. We know about Northwoods, that those documents were released, and people saw exactly what the plans were, to, literally.
But Sal, what about this time? What specifically do you say is a false flag operation, and why would you say that?
I am suspecting, based on the research that Wolfgang Halbig has done, that Sandy Hook was a complete false flag, and actually was a created event that that actually no one was actually killed. It was a staged event. That's pretty extreme. I realize that, but you start looking into it, and you see all the questions he raised, and the fact that the FBI, in 2012, on their records, they state that nobody was killed in Sandy Hook, you know, for that year, that supposedly all those killings occurred, and they've been harassing.
Is he taking the position that everybody who has documented it, the parents are also in on it? The entire community is part of a false flag operation.
And
what about the killings in San Bernardino?
I don't know. I don't know about that yet, and I realize from the outset, for people just hearing this for the first time, and how could you get a whole community to, conspire? And, there's some actual facts that cannot be explained. They set a porta potty in the situation at that school the day before. And the day before the event, there's actual documents out there. She was referencing, your previous call was referencing Jim Fetzer. And if you know anything about him, he's done his due diligence and research, but I can't explain it now. But if you look up Wolfgang Halbig, and I can send you some links later, you'll see that there's a lot of questions concerning that. And San Bernardino, I have no idea exactly what's happened yet, but I'll see what people can find out, and I doubt that it's what we see. I mean, I'm not saying that these things don't occur, and also you got to realize that there's a possibility. I mean, that as outrageous as it sounds, that the mind-controlled assassins are a reality. I don't know if you're aware of this stuff.
Well, yes, I am aware of mind control and the programs that have been conducted with great success in shaping public opinion. Thanks so much, Sal, for your call today.
Sure.
888-874-4888 is a number to call to express your thoughts about the times that we are in and the reactions that you are having to these times. The reports that we have available to us that are telling us particular things, giving us so-called facts, not only about the killings in San Bernardino, we have the trials of these police officers. We have so many things going on that are basically being made to appeal to our sense of identity as Americans, or as President Obama calls us, part of the American family. I don't know what American family he's talking about, because in my view, it is completely fractured. It's a fractured family and has been for a very long time. In fact, I doubt it ever was a United States of America. We are clear that some parts of it were united, and they were united against the other parts. 888-874-4888. I think here at this juncture, we ought to be asking ourselves particular kinds of questions about what is the role here? Who are we as citizens, if you will, of this country? And what is the nature of the relationship between us and systems of government? It's a very, very critical question. From New York, Al, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I think that the issue in California is really the sideshow. I think the real issue that's happening is with the Republican Party. I think the Republican parties have found themselves in a tight squeeze with Trump, because after all, Jeb Bush is their primary candidate. So what could they do to more or less knock him off the top seat? Now, of course, all this is done in conjunction with Trump. Trump is not doing this. You know, he's not a rogue individual. So what can we do from the Republican, let's say the Republicans, can we do to knock this guy out and then have our guy move up? Well, let's stage an event. So we have this event in California. This allows Trump to come out and make these outrageous statements that certainly now basically eliminate him from the possibility of running for office. So I think what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, he's going to have to basically step down from running. And everyone will have to agree that, yeah, you know what, he did overstep his bounds, and he couldn't really deal with, at the international level with politics and policy. So he would have to step down. Now, who's our golden boy?
But before you go there, I want to ask about the use of the word sideshow. 14 people dead, 21 wounded. This is a sideshow, you think?
Well, I say a sideshow because, remember, I'm referencing it with respect to the circus. What's under the big top is really what everybody pays to see. The sideshow is just these little, you know, acts and you know, people doing, you know, juggling balls and things on the side. But that's not what you go to the circus for. And so in order to get to the big top, all right, you need to have a distraction. And this distraction, again, you know, you and I can speak here and basically say, well, 14 people. But remember, we're dealing with people in the power structure that really don't care about the lives of people. There's a bigger agenda here. And if people have to die in order to fulfill their agenda, then that's what happens. I mean,
so are you, I want to be clear. Are you suggesting that somehow the government had a hand in orchestrating this event, and that that the individuals, the husband and wife team, were just participants in this big this sideshow, as you call it?
Well, again, we have to always be careful when we say the word government, because a lot of situations are carried out by organizations that don't represent the government, all right? So in order to focus on my hypothesis is that the ultimate goal is for the Republican Party to have Jeb Bush in office. Now, how do we get there? Because what's happened in the last year is that Trump was supposed to be knocking everybody else out of the picture. Well, unfortunately for the Republicans, that's not the case. He's knocked out Jeb as well. So in order to get back on the game plan, something has to be done. And again, are the people dead? I'm not there. I'm not doing the autopsy. Again, a lot of times, just because somebody writes in the paper that somebody is dead doesn't necessarily mean, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, witness protection where a person is disappeared. So are they dead? I don't know. But that would not stop the powers to be that ultimately want Jeb Bush in the White House. So in my opinion, a lot of focus is on, you know, these two individuals. Were they patsies? Who knows? But that's not what I'm focusing on. The event, something happened, and I'm looking at what's going to go on in the big top. What's going to happen in the big top? And I say that within the next couple of weeks, Trump is going to have to step down because he made the outrageous statements that he did about Muslims, and which was, you know, precipitated by this event out in California. It's like pearls, a string of pearls. Everything begins to get tied together.
All right. Well, thank you for your contribution, Al. From Brooklyn, Phil, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Phil.
How are you doing, Yatrice?
Fine, thank you. And you?
I'm doing fine. I just want to sort of give sort of a general warning about this whole notion of, you know, all of this false flag talk, et cetera, et cetera, because nobody has any of the real information. So, you know, we get little bits and pieces of information, and then we start filling in the blanks with information from who knows where. Now, the situation in San Bernardino, it's complicated, but that's really just based upon the information that we're given. Because it seems like this person had a dispute or something with the early reports with people that he worked with. And then it turns into, it's now like this sort of terrorist thing because the wife posted a single post on the same day allegedly pledging allegiance to ISIS or whatever. So, and then I don't understand how people tie that to Trump. And one thing I'm trying to figure out is this. Okay, Trump doesn't operate as a single individual. I'm sure he's surrounded by a bunch of people. They kick around ideas. And then he comes and presents whatever it is that, you know, his group has deemed that they can go out and say. And the thing is that I believe that Trump says things that people believe but are afraid to say. And that's why he's popular.
How does this change your own particular attitudes politically?
It doesn't change it really at all, because my attitude is that what's being offered up in terms of choices is a folly in and of itself.
Not so much about the presidential race in particular, but your general attitude as a citizen and your relationship to systems of government, for example. How are your attitudes changing?
Well, I think my attitudes are, I'm kind of cynical about what's kind of going on, and all of these events just sort of firm that up. Because when I look at, you know, what happened in Chicago, the video of the kid being shot 16 times, and then a year later they come out with the video, and now they're all like appalled, et cetera, et cetera. Like, they already know about this information.
So if you were to say right now where you are with respect to organized society, organized systems, political systems, economic systems, whatever, how do you see yourself? Are you more connected or more disconnected from it?
That's really a hard question to sort of answer. I would just say that I'm skeptical. And I'm, you know, I operate in a way in which I'm like asking questions and just trying to say, well, does what I'm hearing or what I'm saying, what kind of sense does that make?
Okay. So you are on guard.
Oh yeah. I'm trying to operate with my eyes wide open and my ears wide open as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Phil. Thanks.
All right, you're
I
welcome.
Think that's the wise way to go. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. How are you?
Hello.
Hi. Hope you're doing well, and good morning to everyone from California.
Thank you.
And I think all three of your callers so far have had some good points. I was going to do the same thing as the last caller, is kind of warn against going too far with some of these theories people have and things like that. I do believe there are false flags that have happened, and we know for a fact they have, such as the Gulf of Tonkin and things like that. But I think a lot of times what it really is, you know, there are Muslims in this world who have real reasons to hate this country. I mean, let's not forget that. So groups like ISIS, who were pretty much caused by the invasion of Iraq and all these threats against Syria and all that, or they will do things. So let's not disregard that, is what I'm saying. So, but I do believe that politicians, people in the media, and people seeking to be gain office use a lot of these events to spread fear, spread their agenda, and capitalize on it. Now, that second caller, I believe he had a great point when he was talking about Donald Trump. I don't think Donald Trump or his people had anything to do with this thing in out here in California. But I think they use it to achieve the agenda of the party. Because you can already see the media turning on Donald Trump because of his last statement that we should keep all Muslims out of the country. And he even added and doubled down on that, saying that if you're a Muslim person in the army or in the service over here and you're overseas fighting ISIS, we should take a close look at you when you come back. And that kind of has started this whole media fireball attack against him, which it's about time, because all they ever do is kiss his butt because he supposedly has so much money. So I believe that Republican Party has a real agenda here, and they're just trying to carry it out. But overall, I think the order of the day is fear, 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 fear. Make them scared. And we can keep doing what we're doing. And I'm not holding the Democrats blameless on this. It's you know, fear every day, fear 24/7, so we can keep doing what we're doing. And that's Democrats and Republicans. They want more war. They want more contracts for the big army contractors. They want to get us to just close our eyes and go to sleep. But luckily, there's a lot of people waking up.
Well, from California, as you are, what is the tenor of the coverage that you are getting every single day?
Oh, it's ridiculous. And I don't have cable or satellite, because it just gets on my nerves. Because aside from knowing the raw facts and hearing the press conferences, I don't want to know any of these bloviators' opinions in the media, all these people on Fox and CNN and all that. I don't want to hear all the speculation and all that. That's where I draw the line. All the speculation and opinionating and bloviating, I just don't want to hear it. So we have to know what's going on in the world, so I just get the facts about what's going on and keep it as clean as possible like that. That's what
now,
I do. So,
in your view, was this an act of terrorism, as the president says?
In my view, I believe that all of these events are acts of terrorism, even when it's a white person or white people doing it, which is the real problem we have in this country. You immediately label everything, if it's a brown person, it's terrorism, especially a Muslim. So, yes, terrorism, but not just because they were sympathetic to ISIS, let's just put it that way, or sympathetic to radical jihadism. I believe all of these events are terrorism, and we need to start thinking of them in that way. But this special significance they try to push down your throat when it's someone of another faith that isn't Christian is something we need to be very, very careful with.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, DX, for your call today and for contributing to the conversation.
Have a great day.
Thank you. We go to Chicago next. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Treece, how's it going?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
All right. I'm doing good. It's interesting listening to the calls and listening to the opinions and the topic that you have going. And it's funny, I'm actually changing my views as I'm listening to you know, the opinions of your callers, because you know, I've taken bits and pieces from each of the calls, you know, not completely agreeing, but you know, there were some points that they really hit home for me in regards to this, and I want to explain this in this way. I look at two things. When it comes to the media, when it comes to systems, I look at misdirection and I look at language. Because the thing about language, you talk about terrorism and how, you know, we label the events in San Bernardino as terrorism. However, we don't label cops killing, you know, unarmed black kids as terrorism, even though in the practical sense, it is terrorism. Because these cops have been doing this, you know, for as long as I know, but it's just never come out into the light until recent. So, you know, we look at, you know, foreign terrorism or domestic terrorism, but we never look at police terrorism. And then when you look at misdirection, I always look at it like this, because just like one of the callers was talking about how Trump is basically kind of capitalizing on this incident in San Bernardino as a terrorist and Islamic act. To me, I think Trump, and one of the earlier callers that expressed this, Trump basically is trying to move himself out of the race. And I don't have the same instance in regards to what he thinks, but I think he is basically moving out the race to set up for Hillary Clinton. Because I feel like he's getting so extreme in his views that a modern American citizen would not, you know, touch his views. So they basically vote for Hillary out of fear. And to me, it's a misdirection tactic, because we all know that there is a very thin line, or there's probably no line, between the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think, honestly, from what Trump's rhetoric is doing, is he's basically setting up for Hillary Clinton to win, because of the fact that he's going to drop out because of his extreme views, or nobody's going to support him because of his extreme views, and he's basically setting it up for Hillary to win. So misdirection and language, to me, are the two things I kind of, you know, take out of this conversation for today.
Well, since you're talking misdirection and you're talking language, what about this word radicalization? What is it?
I mean, radical is basically kind of like, you know, extreme, I guess what you could call, you know, extreme behavior. I mean, I guess that's how I could put radicalization in regards to that term.
Do you believe that now we have entered a very interesting phase in the United States where people who are at odds with the system will now be termed radicalized individuals, and therefore a special kind of treatment is to be accorded them by the system?
Yes. We are definitely in that time right now where if you oppose anything that the system, you know, delivers to you, you will be termed radical. Even though, like me myself, you know, the opinions that I express, they sound rational, but to many people who are in the system or involved in the system, would probably consider it as radical, you know. And I know you and other people, you know, and especially your callers, who would come with.
Oh, did we lose Henry? Sorry, Henry. Somebody radically altered our conversation. Henry is gone. I'm so sorry that he was disconnected, but hopefully he'll continue this discussion on Friday, Free Your Mind Friday. Well, that brings us to the end of the program. We don't have time to take a full call, not in the sense that we do here on PRN, where people can stretch out. So we would consider Henry's call the last call for today and pick this up again, because, you know, this is a very important time, I think, because so many things are cross-pollinating with each other to create an environment and a specific point in political time where I think a couple of years from now, we will see how important this event really is, and this time really is, in the shaping of the national identity, political thought, and obviously individual action. So all of it is coming together. And we are getting these messages. They're certainly mixed messages. They're conflicting messages. But we ought to be very much on the alert, as DX from Los Angeles told us today. Thank you all for calling and contributing to the program and with your profound thoughts. I appreciate it. Keep it right here. The NDC Savings Club is next. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You'll find a sad street. Just look around you, and you'll find sad street. Oh, a sad street. Oh Lord, haven't you heard? No, no. Back on sad. Seems like that's where all the trouble be. Down on Sad Street.